The second reading is from the book of Colossians. However, I'm going to back up in the chapter. This is going to be chapter 3, verses 1 through 11, as we continue our jaunt through the book of Colossians. Listen now for a word from God to the church this day. So if you have been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things that are above, not on things that are on earth. For you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, is revealed, then you also will be revealed with him in glory. Put to death, therefore, whatever in you is earthly: fornication, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which is idolatry. On account of these, the wrath of God is coming on those who are disobedient. These are the ways you also once followed when you were living that life. But now you must get rid of all such things: anger, wrath, malice, slander, and abusive language from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, seeing that you have stripped off the old self with its practices and have clothed yourselves with the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge according to the image of its creator. In that renewal, there is no longer Greek and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave and free, but Christ is all in all. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Please pray with me. O Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. I don't remember how old I was when I first saw the movie Jaws, but I know that I was way too young. I know because for months after seeing that film, I was terrified of going in the water. And not just in the ocean either. I was old enough to know that sharks do not swim in lakes or pools, and old enough to know that my chances of getting attacked by a shark in the ocean were next to nothing. But fear, once fear is introduced to the brain, it doesn't always respond to facts. All I knew for sure is that everything below the waterline was hidden from my view, and my fear-infused imagination had no problem supplying all kinds of horrific possibilities. When my doctor told me he suspected I might have cancer, I felt a similar kind of fear. Before he had told me any of the good news about how treatable thyroid cancer is, my mind had already filled in the blanks with all kinds of unreasonable possibilities. There was so much I didn't know, so much I was not yet able to see, obscured from my view. Standing in the ocean this past week, looking out across the vast expanse of the Atlantic, I wondered if our nation isn't at a similar vantage point. A child exposed to so much violence possibility in recent years that she suspects there is nothing but evil and danger lurking below every surface. A patient who's been told that his health isn't perfect and has jumped to conclude that his death is imminent. All we know for certain is that our future is hidden from plain view. But when we are afraid, fear is more than willing to fill in all the blanks. The writer of Colossians has some good news for people carrying that kind of fear. At least I think it's good news. Maybe it's better to start first with the bad news. Our future is still hidden from us. The world can be a very dangerous place. Death cannot be avoided. There is a lot about our lives, a lot about our world that remains hidden from us, a mystery that we cannot know. That is the bad news. The good news is that we've been buried with Christ and so also raised with him. Our lives are inextricably connected to the one who overcomes death, the source of all fear. And so while we cannot know the details of our futures, we do know that regardless of what lies below the surface, what we cannot see, our future is something that we can anticipate with joy instead of dread. It is a future that brings hope because it is a future that belongs to God. Not everything that is hidden from our view is something to be afraid of. At least that's the way the author of Colossians sees it. Faith is the gift that enables us to trust God when the fullness of our futures has yet to be revealed. It is the relationship that enables us not to give up when circumstances are bleak. It is the relationship that helps us defend against fear. When I first read this passage, I thought it seemed odd that after this glorious conclusion that our future is not something to fear, the author then turns to a list of vices to avoid: fornication, impurity, passion, evil desire, greed. After working so hard in the last two chapters to convince us that we are saved not because of our own perfection, but because of God's grace, we get a list of do's and don'ts that seem to bring back all those old checklists of who's in and who's out. After stirring us to believe that our future, though hidden, is worthy of our hope because it's a future that is hidden with Christ, we are brought quickly down to the ground level. It seemed like an odd turn. After the text last week that Tim pointed out rejects the dualism of the Greco-Roman world, that dualistic ideology that viewed the elements of the world as lesser and corrupt, while the elements of the spirit were superior and pure. How could this author, who rejects that dualism, then turn and say, "Set your mind on the things that are above, not on the things that are on the earth"? How could the author, who encouraged the Colossians to see Christ in the world, not absent from it, suddenly turn on his readers? But these aren't so much lists of vices, I think, as they are actions or qualities that betray our lack of trust. Greed is the best case in point. It's not just wanting more for myself. It is believing that this house or this car or these clothes are going to land me the security and status that I need to secure my own future. It is putting my trust in things that can't save me from sharks or cancer or death. Things that do not deliver on their promises, putting my trust in something other than God, which is the definition of idolatry. It is reverting back to that fearful understanding of the world that the Colossians used to know before they knew the God of Jesus Christ. God has overcome the root of what drives us to chase after wealth. So greed betrays our lack of trust. God has made it possible to have real relationships with each other. So using other people as objects for your own gratification betrays a lack of trust. These are not lists of vices that we must avoid to get closer to God. They are dead-end ways of living that expose how we miss the truth of Christ's presence in the world, in our lives. Remember that in baptism you stripped off that old self, the author writes, so don't go back to that worn-out garment. You've put on the clothing of the new self, the one that makes everything new. That new self is where all the possibility lies. The possibility of joy and hope and love, which is to say the possibility for real relationship with God and with each other. That's the garment that we get to wear. Colossians argues, the only one that brings our future with God into the present. The only one that brings our future with each other into the present. David Brooks, the columnist with the New York Times, pointed out a few days ago that both the Republican and the Democratic conventions featured a lot of grieving parents this year. The fear of violent death, he wrote, is on everybody's mind, from ISIS, from cops, from lone sociopaths. The essential contract of society that if you behave responsibly, things will work out, has been severed, he wrote, for many people. Brooks, who seems kind of close to despair himself, goes on to argue that if this is the case, then the rules may have changed in politics. That civility, optimism, humility, and gentleness, all virtues that he sees in American political history, these may be no more. The country may have thrown out these virtues in favor of fear, cynicism, anxiety, and extreme pessimism. I would like to argue differently. I often do. But in times like these, I think it's important for the church to be reminded that our hope is not rooted in virtues. If our hope was rooted in virtues, then we would despair every time those virtues diminish in our public life together, or when we fail to uphold those virtues in our own lives. Our hope isn't rooted in the Messiah complexes of nations or of individuals. We have one Messiah. His name is Jesus. Our hope is rooted in Christ, who is all in all, who is never more present in the world. Get this, never more present in the world than when human hope is most absent from it. Christ is the source of our hope, the one who gives us a future. And if Christians are going to be good for anybody, including good for the country, we have to remember that. It is the source of what propels us to seek justice in the public square, but also what keeps us going when that justice is delayed. That's what the author is trying to get across to the Colossians. It's what the Colossians may be trying to get across to us. If you want true hope, don't go back to that fearful worldview that wants you to be afraid of everything you do not know, of everything that you cannot see. Don't go back to worrying over your future, to fretting about your own security. That life has already been put to death for your own sake. There is a new you that is possible even in the midst of this fearful world, maybe especially in the midst of it. Mark Watney, stranded on Mars, seemed to find that kind of new self in the movie The Martian, which I saw for the second time with my family this week. Short on food and running out of options, he typed out his last wishes to his commander, who was traveling thousands of miles away on a spacecraft that had inadvertently left him behind. "Please tell my parents," he said. "Tell them I love what I do and that I'm really good at it and that I'm dying for something big and beautiful and greater than me. Tell them I said I can live with that. I'm dying for something big and beautiful and greater than me." Watney came to that conclusion only when he felt his death was imminent. Christians can come to that conclusion the moment we learn about this font. All of our lives, we are invited to die for something big and beautiful and greater than me. The new life shaped by the God of the cross, the new life where death is gone, the old life is gone, regrets, failure, guilt, all gone, just a glorious life full of hope and beauty and love for those whose faith allows them to loosen their grip on themselves and on the people they love, knowing that Christ is all in all. On Thursday, or maybe it was Friday, standing waist deep in the ocean with some of my family, suddenly, not 15 yards away, a pair of dolphins powered out of their water, their exhalations bursting sprays of water loud enough to thrill the congregation of people assembled in their chairs on the beach. Then another dolphin emerged, then two more, and finally another, a chorus of angels emerging from their shrouded lair to remind us that though we had no power to force them to appear or perform, still they were there. They had been there. They were so close to me, and I had not known it. They were hidden below the surface of what I could see. Not everything that is hidden from our view needs to be feared. Why did they wait? Why did they wait to show themselves until that moment? I don't know. There is so much that I still don't know. There is so much hidden from my view. What I do know is that Christ is close in you, in me, in neighbors near and far, which means that heaven is close. Not some special place above the clouds, but God's dream, which has become our future. It is that close. It's big and beautiful and greater than you and me. The future that we are all dying for.